Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live. And hello to the wonderful Isabel Estrada.
Thank you. Hello.
Otherwise sometimes known as Dr. Isabel O'Hagan.
Right.
those are two different names.
Right.
So yeah. You have two mariachi bands, at least, that I know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great to have you on the program. So before I forget, I'm Mel Rosenberg, and I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And Isabel, can I call you Isabel?
Sí, Isabel is fine. Sí.
Pero it'll be much easier. Yeah. I'm going to get confused. Okay, Isabel Estrada. Tell us about your new book. You have a book that just came out a few months ago with Sleeping Bear. Wonderful book. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay. I think it is a wonderful book. There's a lot of love in this book. So I think that's the focus of it. Came from my love of the music. I love all music pretty much, but I especially love mariachi music. It's very close to my heart because it brings me back home. So I'm in Michigan now, but I'm from Arizona, right near the border. And so the music always reminds me of family, community, you know, the home, the sense of home. So I wrote this story about a young girl who wants to be a mariachi. It's the 1970s, but and this is certainly fact. At that time in the United States and in Mexico, the girls and women were not part of mariachi. They were just not allowed or discouraged. So yeah,
that doesn't make much sense. You know, you're from Tucson, Arizona. Arizona is a part of the United States. What happened in the 1970s? You know, they had the women's power, women's lib, women's everything. What is with this?
Yeah, it some of those.
They forgot about Arizona.
Yeah, kind of a macho attitude. But, you know, different cultures around the world also have, you know, men's only, no women allowed, traditions. But I think, you know, most places are going past that for the most part. So in the late 70s and 80s throughout the United States, that did change. There were some trailblazers, some women. And so in this little story, Tucci is a trailblazer in her own community and says, I can do this too. And she's bullied a little bit. She's taunted, teased, dismissed by older men. But with the help of her grandmother, that's another part of the book. There's discussion of generations and how we help each other. So her grandmother helps. Her grandmother had wanted also to be a mariachi. And so she helps Tucci achieve her dream. And so Tucci persists.
Yeah, Tucci, but she snoops around the attic. I like that about your story. It's not as if Nana gives her the guitarón. No. She finds it herself, and then she says, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on? How come this is here and I didn't know about it? So, yeah. And Nana remembers a few of the chords and starts teaching her. But then it's Tucci that dedicates herself for months in the book. You know, we just say one line for months. She practices and then, yeah, shows the world she can be mariachi too.
Hey, show us the book. Read a few pages.
Okay.
Let's enjoy this wonderful miracle.
The artist, the illustrator, I should definitely give credit because his
You
name is
should.
Ari Rivera Sonda, and she is a visual artist from Mexico. She lives near Oaxaca. So she drew beautiful pictures. And here, the first picture you see, I'll read it. Gucci twirled to the sounds that poured into the plaza. Letting the music kiss her skin, she closed her eyes, lifted her imaginary guitar, and swayed. I wish I could be a mariachi, she said, as her knees bounced to the rousing rhythms. With its sweet cinnamon melodies like silky swirls of honey poured over a stack of mamacita's fried buñuelos, her music would wave over the plaza too and move people to sing, dance, and play. In bed that night, her eyes drank in the moonlight. Duchi whispered, "Hear my songful wish, Senora Luna. Make me a mariachi." And so she does. You mentioned that she snoops around and finds the moonlight glimmers on the case and it twangs. And she's like, "Oh, a guitarrón. Oh my gosh." She pulls it out. I love this page where I say, "Melodic rhythms, the melodic ribbons embroidered the sky." There they are, embroidering the sky. Ari did a beautiful job.
So she sure shows them.
Yeah, she sure said. And there's this great page where Ari has illustrated the boy saying, she's coming to school with her guitarrón to go to the first meeting of the mariachi group. And they're there saying, "No way, go away. This is only for boys." And she says, "Oh, it's not a play on the word macho." She said, "It's not mariacho, it's mariachi. You get it?" So she stands her ground. I say she stands tall and strong like a sahuaro. So the cactus, the sahuaro in Arizona is sort of an icon, a symbol. So she's standing tall and strong. This is funny. I read this story to some children here in Michigan. And so I stopped and asked, "Do you know what a sahuaro is?" They didn't know. So I explained. Oh, it's kind of fun to share. So there are cultural bits. You can see at the beginning, I talked about there was some mention of foods. The singing, the dance, the practice of the music playing in the plaza. So yeah, I try to intertwine some of the cultural aspects of the Mexican culture,
The food, the smells.
the foods, the smell, as writers, the multi-sensorial approach to writing. Yeah.
Excellent. And of course, we won't go into the details, but she sure shows them in the end
Yeah. Oh
who
yeah.
can play a guitarón in the mariachi band. So how much of this story is Isabel Estrada?
Well, I had wanted to play the violin as a child, and I couldn't. So I'm
Por
also a musician.
qué no?
Partially for cost. So that brings me to another part. My family was poor when we were growing up, and we were many, so we didn't have money, and the school only had one violin. And it didn't come to me because I was younger. So I was younger at that time. So it went to the older child, makes sense. So I picked up the flute. So the part I think that really comes close to my heart is I'm a musician. So I could relate to Ducci's desire to be a musician. And I try to picture, music is a ethereal kind of thing, it just happens at the moment. It's aural, unlike the art, that's more concrete. So I try to picture how music might look on the page, on the written page. So I played with that oral and visual aspect of putting things together. So that was great fun, putting words to the sound.
Yes, absolutely. And well, I should add that you're a PhD in music education, and that we want to talk about that also. So lead us back to your early life in Tucson, Arizona. I have a theory that we end up writing to our inner child, and mine is 5 years old, and your story is for 5 year-olds. So are you a 5 year-old like the rest of us?
Oh yeah. And I think this book was healing in that sense. You have your 5-year-old self that often, you have to, okay, it's okay as a grown up. You can deal with it now. But it was interesting because I lived that experience, but as a child, you don't always have words to put to those feelings that you're feeling. So I think as a full-grown adult here, mature adult, I was able to go back, and touch upon that.
Mm-hmm. And another interesting thing for me is that she picks the guitarón, which is like the biggest, you know, she could have. There's smaller instruments in that than mariachi band.
And you know, I mentioned the violin. Originally, I did have the violin as her. She was playing the violin in the plaza at the very beginning, but then I realized that there was actually a little bit of humor in the guitarón aspect, and I like the fact that her grandmother is also a smaller woman,
Yeah,
more petite like.
and they teach us as authors to exaggerate. So
Yeah.
it's a lovely exaggeration. So you are the 5-year-old in the story. And what happened? So you weren't allowed to play the violin, but you played the flute.
Yeah, I picked up the
And
flute.
you became a musician. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I did all the music. You know, I was part of all the music groups in school. And just a little aside, I took summer school 4 years in a row in high school so that I could take more music classes and be in the groups during the year. So I was in band and choir. So you could, you know, otherwise, if I hadn't done summer school, there's no way I could have put both groups in my schedule. So by the time I was graduating, I said, oh, I love this. It's my passion. I want to be a music major. And my dream was to have been a wonderful, famous singer singing at the Metropolitan Opera stage. That was my goal. But, you know, life happens. So then I said, well, I'll be a very wonderful, you know, love teaching music.
Well, hold on a second. So what happened to your opera career?
Oh, I tried. I did, you know, audition, you prepare auditions, and it just didn't happen. You have to win auditions to get in your, for the most part, in the United States, it's an audition system.
You know, I mentioned this in practically every show. Every author of a traditionally published picture book that I interview has had a miracle happen to them. Sometimes multiple miracles, because you have to be the one in 1,000, the one in 5,000, and it doesn't matter, you know, if it's an own voices book, which this is to a certain extent, because there's thousands of own voices writers
right.
that send in manuscripts. So as good as your book is, and it's wonderful, it's still it's a miracle. We're going to talk about this miracle. And breaking in as an opera singer is again 1 in 1,000.
Oh yes, absolutely.
I don't know why I wanted to be a jazz singer. I can't understand why people want to be opera singers, but you wanted to be an opera singer, and you're probably an alto or mezzo soprano. What are you?
Oh, actually, I was a light lyric coloratura.
Oh,
but my speaking voice has always been low and deep. So, I think Renee Fleming also has a low deep.
So you were competing with 10,000 other singers. Okay,
oh, yeah.
You didn't make it. You didn't make it as an opera singer, and like many of us, so you went into education.
Mm-hmm.
You,
yeah.
So what did you study at the undergraduate level?
I studied mostly choral conducting. You know,
really?
You had your full course of. So it was music all the way, and also dance. When I was undergrad, I did double dance and double music education major. So
you're also a dancer?
Yeah, I'm also a dancer, modern dance. I was into the whole Martha Graham, you know, Isadora Duncan kind of thing.
The whole shtick.
Yeah.
Wow, or the whole nine yards, as the Americans say.
Oh, yeah.
So to what extent... So this is another question I have to ask you. You have, like many other people living in the States who have different ethnic backgrounds, you have more than one cultural identity. Brought up in a Mexican family, probably speaking Spanish as an infant,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to break into American society, which is often not forgiving of people who are different.
Oh yeah. I grew up, and there was, and there still is this idea of the Spanglish, where you would combine, and it was frowned upon. But educated people, do the Spanglish in that part of the world because that's just, who we are. So I don't think it's a sign of being, ill-educated about yourself. It's just your culture. So when I was growing up,
No, but
if
they
you
do you feel, of course it's not, that I've interviewed several authors who use Spanglish in their texts, and I love it because a lot of Jewish people who came to America used Yiddish in their English, and some Yiddish words became English, like to schlep and to kvetch and all these words that I'm sure you use in Kalamazoo. So I think it's terrific. It's what's called the melting pot. But for people in the melting pot, it's not so easy to melt, is it?
No, when I was a child and for a long time after, if you spoke mostly Spanish, you were held back a year. And those classes were not very helpful at all. So it was, so you were delayed an entire school year and sometimes held even further until, you were deemed worthy of, okay, now you. So there was no attempt for any kind of bilingualism or,
Did
ESL.
this happen to you?
No one in my family. Although it was funny because I did go to a kindergarten that was all in Spanish, so somehow I did manage to pick up. But I'm one of seven children, sort of in the middle. So I was able to learn a little bit more from my siblings that were going to school. So
And when you were growing up, did you have picture books in the house?
not many, but my mom had a lot of the golden books.
Yes.
So she was a real fan of the golden books, and she, even though we were very poor, she subscribed to the Highlights magazine, the cricket
Wow.
magazine,
Wow.
and she had that encyclopedia plan, where you bought some volumes at a time. We loved those. So I grew up with that generation where you just loved the encyclopedia and kept flipping and flipping
That's
and just loving.
a wonderful gift from a mother. That's wonderful. Okay, so now we're going to segue back to your musical career. So you spent years, I'm guessing, educating young people about music. What is the job of a music educator? I'm also a music educator of a different kind, but so I'm going to ask you the question.
I think it's to just bring aesthetic awareness to the art form. And as a music educator, I like to show children ways and avenues of how music is just part of life, that you can interweave it, so not box it, but that music permeates all of our cultures and the worthiness. And so, and I also like to teach them ways to listen deeply, listen with more intent, focus, intent on listening. So I've never tried to produce musician, but I've taught privately. I've taught private voice students, for those wanting careers or more specialty. But for the general student, it's just how music can enrich your life. That's my focus.
Do you think there's a trade-off when you teach somebody to appreciate music intellectually and you start explaining to them about the music? Does that help them enjoy it emotionally or hinder them?
I think it does, because I work mostly with children up through middle school. I think if for children, it's not just sitting at your desk and abstractly understanding the music, but if you can embody the music. So if you have visual maps and then they create visual maps, or you rhythmics type approach where you move through the music, and so now your body, it's not just your ears, but your body, mind, and
So
spirit.
do you get the kids drawing and moving around
Yeah,
while they
drawing
listen?
and moving. So you make it active. So in music education, there are like eight or nine different what we call standards, but they were the conceptuals of how you receive music and perceive music.
It's wonderful. I mean, we could turn this discussion into a musical one, and I have a zillion questions to ask you, but I'm going to hold myself
Okay.
and get back to writing here. Bad boy, bad boy. Okay. So what happened? Did you wake up one day and say, oh my, oy vey. That's what you say. I don't know what you say in Spanish. I should be a writer. What happened?
Well, I had been using a lot of picture books in my classes, especially ones that were, musical, and or we could create soundtracks for the books. So we did that. So I was just
Well, hold
buying.
on. Like what? Give me an example.
Like Possum Come a Knocking at My Door. It's sort of a, it's got a feel. Possum Come a Knocking at My Door, at My Door. Possum Come a Knocking at My Door. Just kind of pulling that out of my ear. But you could take, anything that has a musical feel or a rhythm, and you can add your instruments, you can add your body movements, your percussion, or we could take a beautiful story, maybe a fairy tale, and then create a soundtrack while we read the story.
I
So
love that. I love that. But actually, you can take anything,
yeah.
and even if it's not necessarily a rhythmic,
Rhythmic
you can
book.
find the rhythm. You can create the rhythm. So actually, wow, that's great. So I never thought about this. Wonderful that you came on the show. So you can take any picture book
Anything.
and turn it into music.
Right. And you
Oh, I
can,
love.
as I mentioned, you have a storybook, and you can have little interludes,
Yeah,
sinfonietas in
so
between.
kids can take their favorite children's book and bring it to school and turn it into some kind of musical. I love that.
Musical experience, right?
I
And
love
so
that.
and then I became a mom. And so I had this big collection of books already as a teacher, and then I thought, oh, more books as a mom. And so I just fell in love again with the whole picture book and chapter books, older books too, world, the world of literature. And so just loving picture books, I just said, oh, I want to do this. So I joined SCBWI about 10 years ago. This year I had jo joined 12 by 12, to delve into the writing aspect. So that part came easily, and it probably because I had worked with the lyrics, I mean, not the lyrics, but the text in books, and like treating it like lyrics, like song lyrics. So I was
So
familiar.
you had an angle.
Yeah.
And we talked about this briefly before the interview, the importance of coming to writing from a different place in the universe, from a different profession, from a different
Right.
point of view.
And I think this book captures musicality. I'm a musician. From day one, I grew up singing and dancing. My whole family did. And so I just underneath, because I didn't even think about it, but some of my friends have said, oh, the musicality in this book is really great. And then it was their comments that made me, so now I'm pitching the same thing. I'll say, oh yeah, the musicality is in there.
Okay, so you did several right things. You joined groups, you joined SCBWI. Did you join a critique group?
Yes, I've been two critique groups for about 10 years each, though.
Okay, this is concurrent, concomitant.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what happened?
Well, I've been writing. I'm my own self-critic, and I think that comes from being a musician and dancer, because you're always, striving for that ideal, that apex. And so I was writing, but I knew it's not quite ready. So I've only been, maybe the last 2 years, I've been writing for 10, but the last 2 years I started submitting, and I submitted this to a contest. I didn't get the prize, but I got the call, and they said, we'd love for your book. Sleeping Bear Press did.
What was the contest, Isabel?
Own Voices, Own Stories. They
Okay.
were, and it was a national contest. They wanted to start almost an imprint in a sense. It's a collection they're putting out with this focus. And so they said, oh, we realized that we have, the award winner, but we need more books for this collection. So I said, yes, I'd love for, and
So,
they've been very helpful.
no, they're a great press, and I've interviewed lots of authors. So what about agent? Most people look for an agent. I've been looking for an agent for years. They're hard to find.
I haven't, up to this point, looked for an agent because this book offer came 2 years ago, and because it takes 2 years, and so I've been really happy with preparing for this and doing all the social media, but I'm just now submitting work to agents to get that support.
Uh-huh. So you have more stories.
I've been writing stories, so I'm now throwing them out.
And what percentage of them are musical?
I think a lot of them are musical in the sense of the line and the approach. In terms of the theme, I have two others, and one about a little girl that wants to be an opera singer. So, yeah.
Oh, that's even closer to the corazón.
Yeah, some little kids know about opera because they hear it, and yeah, they hook onto it. Some kids do, that opera sound.
That's wonderful. So what advice do you have for other people? Because it's so hard to get a traditional publishing deal. And I ask everybody who has, what are your best suggestions to people who are striving and working and trying?
Well, I have some friends that were published because they entered the contests. A friend here who's now a well-known author got her first book out because she took a chance, and actually she did it for maybe even 2 or 3 years. She didn't get the first contest, second, maybe it was the second or third. She kept, submitting, and then, okay, I won. And they published her book, and that, her career took off. So I would say look for those opportunities because those open doors very quickly. And there are, I think there are several grants and awards, prizes out there. And then the second is just really focus on your craft. Believe in yourself, focus on your craft. And yeah, do start submitting your books because they're not going to be out there unless you take that extra step.
Okay, and how do you deal with the rejection? Because we all have this pain. Of course, I had this for many years as a scientist, but it's more painful to get a story from your corazón rejected than a scientific paper.
Yeah.
It's like a dagger. Yeah. I've had hundreds. So, and I'm sure you've had rejections. How do you deal with them?
I think that comes, I'm kind of tough-skinned in my attitude. And I think it comes from, being a musician and dancer where you've had many auditions. And when you're a music major, dance major, you have juries every semester where you are critiqued like crazy by other professors that don't like your professor, that kind of thing. So it's very political. So I'm kind of used to that in the sense. And so with my writing, I just kind of remind myself, well, you've been through this little cycle and this kind of game. You just keep going. So the important thing is keep going. You're not going to ever get to your dream unless you and then you read the stories of how, I think I read recently, Kate DiCamillo put, what is it, the Mason, her story, oh, I'm drawing a blank, her first big novel, Mason, okay, I'm drawing a blank here, but she put that out over 100 times. Here's this marvelous novel, and it was maybe 103 rejections, and then finally publisher 104 said, okay, yeah, this is it, and then it won all, because of Winn-Dixie. I was thinking Mason-Dixie, but because of Winn-Dixie. Yeah, so there are a lot of those stories out there. So I take heart from that.
That's wonderful.
So I too can be a good loser.
the other thing that's special about you is you mentioned that you know when a manuscript is ready or not.
Yeah.
And most of us don't. Run us through that, Isabel.
And I'm learning this more recently, that you can't just write because you're writing and it's sort of a meh, kind of story. I think you have to write a story that has significance, that has deeper meaning. And if you can manage a story that has different layers of meaning, layers upon layers, so that it can take the, it calls for rereadings and rereadings and going back to a favorite classic. So that's I have my ideal, and so that's what I strive for. And so I can, take a step back and as I
Hold
said,
on, but how do you, most of us, including me, have trouble taking a step back? Even though, let's say, I'll know what the weakness in my manuscript is, and then I will send it to my critique group or to my editor, but some little bird inside me will say, oh, I hope they don't see it. I hope they don't see it. But I know it's there. So how do you manage that? How do you manage to be your own critic and say, Isabel, this isn't good enough yet?
Well, I do depend. I do have some very trustworthy consultants that I work with. They're in my corner and they believe in me. So I've been working with one person, well, two people closely for 3 or 4 years. But they're also teachers and mentors. So when they're teaching me by critiquing one group how to go through the process of, doing that with my other manuscripts. So I think that's part of it. You have to teach yourself. So a mentor will look at a book and just say, yeah, you have all the parts, but what is it about? Why should I move on?
Okay, I'm going to have to refine my question to make it more difficult for you to answer. Are you able? I mean, okay, same with me. I rely on my critique groups and my critique swapping buddies to tell me the truth, which sometimes they do kindly, and my editor. But you said earlier that you know when something needs fixing and you know when something is ready. And I don't. How do you know?
I think it has to sing to you. It really has to sing to you. And it has to, it has to zing and sing. And
do you sing your stories to yourself?
I kind of do. Yeah, you could say that I do. And so, I mentioned the one about the little girl who wants to be a soprano, an opera singer. That one was from the very first one that had to sing. Otherwise,
so Isabel, I'm going to ask you to do something that I've never asked an author to do. And you're not going to say no, because you promised to answer all my preguntas.
Yeah, I did.
Right?
Right.
So I would like you to open your book to some random page and sing it to me. Make up a song that goes together with your text spontaneously.
That night, Tucci opened her window and breathed in the moonlight. Muchas gracias, Señora Luna. And then she began to strum her guitar on straight from her corazón. For she was now Tucci la Mariachi. Yeah.
More!
Oh, God.
This is, I don't cry in interviews usually. But you have brought you've moistened my eyes here. That is incredibly beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I think that your story here, the story and the meta story, your wonderful story, and the story around the story and the music of the story. And we are going to say goodbye soon to everybody, but I'd like you to leave and come back, because I want to ask you something, not in front of the children.
Sure, absolutely.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you? You've been so brilliantly clear in your journey and so candid.
I was just going to say, a child asked me recently when I read to a group, what was your dream? I think, you asked me, and I said, the opera singer. And then she said, well, what happened? And I said, I tried. And I said, that was the biggest, boost for me, that I didn't give up. I tried and I tried. It didn't happen. But I think the important part was that, I gave it all I had. So I reached for my dream with passion. Sometimes you don't get that dream, and then life, redirects you. But I said, that's the important part of life.
So is this book a redirection? Isabel succeeds in in the children's book Against All Odds, when she didn't succeed in the opera world.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
No, but this is really this is poignant. This is teaching me something. So, we're all redirectors.
Yeah.
So it's not about finding your, oh my goodness, this is a real oy vey moment here. So it's really not, I'm getting goosebumps. Thank you for being on the show. It's not about finding your direction in life, is it? It's about finding your redirection.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because
wow.
that's the path of life for most of us, unless it comes down, you know, struck by lightning and aha, but most of us have to wander through the desert.
Most of us redirect.
Mm-hmm.
Like Moses in the desert.
Like Moses in the desert. Yeah.
Wow, this has been incredible. So I'm going to say to everybody else, this is a wonderful book. Show again, everybody, your book, La Mariachi, From Sleeping Bear, illustrated by
Ari Rivera Sonda. And go out and hear some mariachi, folks. Go here, you know, go to your Apple Music, Spotify. Listen to mariachi today. It's wonderful music.
I have a mariachi in one of my stories. It's wonderful. And I really highly recommend this book, not only for people who want to see themselves in the illustrations, and it's a book for children of every language, of every color, of every creed, and of every background.
Right.
It's really its own voices, but it's also universal. And that's what makes a good story. So Dr. Isabel Estrada O'Hagan, there's another name or two in there, isn't there?
Oh yeah, I have lots of names.
That's also an identity thing, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. It is.
We'll talk about that your next book. So I want to also interview you for your next book, whenever that's coming out. Do you have a book coming out, or we don't know yet?
No, don't know yet. Working on it. Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck with this one, so that you'll have many books in the future.
Thank you, and thank you for your audience. Thank you for your.
And it's my pleasure, and muchas gracias to you, and okay. Excuse me for my Spanish, thank you very much. And I'm Mel Rosenberg, the host of the Children's Literature Channel, and I've been here with the wonderful Isabel Estrada O'Hagan, celebrating her new book, La Mariachi, out with Sleeping Bear, just a few months ago. And we're going to say goodbye to everybody, and leave and come back in. I have a question to ask you.
Okay, fabulous.